So we have board time on 26 February.
Short week, but it's a five-day week, though, isn't it?
It's kind of quickly, though.
Last week was a short one.
Must mean you're having fun.
Sometimes a short one.
Get all my work done.
Sometimes a short one seem long.
Yeah.
Okay, ready to get started?
We are.
Okay. First item on the agenda is Center for Community Health Security Assessment. I guess we have two things we're going to look at here. Tina should have provided you with a spreadsheet. And
yep.
This is not a complete product. This is the initial run. Lord and Bill Springmeier and the safety committees at the Center for Community Health are still...
They met on it today. They're not quite done going through everything yet. There is a lot of involvement and talking, so they kind of blew their time. So they have to pick it up again.
Yeah, you'll see... Item number one is review the comprehensive security assessment previously done by outside consultants. We did some time ago, when was this, Mark? 2009. We brought in an outside consultant who did a very thorough security assessment. Mark made a copy of this for each of you.
Really, 2 years ago?
Almost.
4 years ago?
Three and a half now.
Did we do, I assume they ended up with some recommendations. Did we... Well, do those recommendations?
We did most of the passive ones and the easier ones to do. ones where we're talking about presence, law enforcement, magnetometers, things like that. They weren't into that far. So most of what you're going to read in here is really what comes out today. It's
That building is occupied by a federal agency, by a number of nonprofits, and by two county, well, three actually, because we have a couple of general services people over there. And... we call it the tenant committee, and they were briefed on the results of this. And there's a culture in the Center for Community Health that is client-centric, where they want the people coming into that building to feel like they're valued members of the community, they're welcomed, and the tenants, I think, unanimously agreed that we wanted a low-key presence. We wanted the ability to deconflict, have somebody with conflict resolution skills and that sort of thing. You know, the security we have there, they're unarmed. But they have been very effective in neutralizing a number of threats since they've been in the building.
And we have made some headway because initially they didn't even want a presence there. And so that the presence we have there now is much better than...
Yep.
Because initially they didn't want any presence there.
Now this event,
what do we have now? What do we have? Our presence of
our security, our rented security guard. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think we have two people.
Off and on, one or two.
Hangs around the lobby, or
one in the lobby and one rotates around the building.
Yeah, and they cruise the parking lots and they rotate around the building as well.
Great.
Yeah, I visited with the one in the main lobby on Thursday. And I asked him, I said, are you armed? He says, no. I says, is that your preference? He says, yeah, it is. So he was happy to be unarmed. And,
so what about like a stun gun?
He said, well,
no, I don't think
it really has to do with how do you define armed, because there's non-lethal kinds of, you know, pepper spray and that kind of thing that I assume they have something. But do they have anything?
I don't believe
them.
Do they?
I believe they're trained with pepper spray.
Yeah, they are. He's got the pepper spray. He has an asp and he's got handcuffs. So it's less than lethal.
What's that?
Is that an extendable baton?
A baton?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would think that...
It's not the old wooden stick.
I would think that a stun gun or something like that would be in the same category as a mace, but there's been cases that the mace didn't work with a stun gun. You know, the man's all by himself, and it's not... The average person is the guy that might be coming in there up on drugs. You know, they're strong as a horse. And the stun gun would disable them long enough to get them handcuffed.
Well...
Yeah, those things have been known to kill people, though, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, if you have propensity to have a heart attack, you could have one with one of those.
No more than dog pie.
Also, the issue with one of those is, do you... And this organization doesn't really want our folks to get that up close and present. You know, they would just as soon back off and call 911. And so that's that's really their chosen path. Is that's more his stuff is more self defense versus offensive, and so they'd rather have him call 911 if that's what it takes. Yeah. Initially, they said, don't call any outside help. Just call downstairs where they have crisis folks. They'll come up and de-escalate it. And we kind of went back and forth in that one because if we've had some folks that have been real threatening, that even de-escalating from downstairs wasn't going to fix it. So it's a tenuous balance at any given time. Mm-hmm.
If you're going to require or if you're going to suggest or make a condition of their contract, because you could contract for a heightened level of security that would require them to carry some kind of a taser that you wanted, you need to know two things. One, obviously it'll cost more because it requires additional training. The other thing is, from a liability standpoint, a taser is in between, it actually is in between a pepper spray and a gun. It's a heightened level of force, or it's a heightened force. It's an intermediate level of force, and it requires a heightened level of threat to be able to justify it. And so there's been a lot of litigation about the improper or excessive use of tasers, and so training becomes really important, and we can do that, but it's one of those decisions you really need to make it intentionally, because it's going to have an out-of-the-pocket effect immediately, both initially and for the additional training. Mm-hmm.
Well, none of these things... Are you going to say something?
How many incidents have we had?
In what period of time?
A year.
Well, of a serious
nature... It'd be hard
nature,
to say. Serious, we've had relatively few.
I'm going to say, on average, one a year.
So, where I'm going with that is along that number.
Okay.
So if we have one incident a year, and the security individual we have has been ample, then I don't know why we would change it.
Yeah.
Right.
We're not saying we will, but the employees in the building suggested that we go back and review the security recommendations and reevaluate them in light of new facts. We may or may not take additional steps.
I've heard what Laura and those folks have talked about over CCH, and there isn't anything new under the sun, so to speak. Everything they've discussed here is everything they discussed previously, but we've got some new folks. So a lot of the discussions already occurred, and some of the suggestions of fixing there are to fix those things. So they're going to have to go back and look as a TANF committee whether they want to do that.
Yeah, and one example is, and Commissioner Mielke, you were with me when we went there, the very first place we stopped. We were told that there's this very large workspace, and there's only one door in and out, and that's a door that can't lock.
Yeah.
So if they all retreat to that space, and the shooter comes into that space, they have no way out, and they can't keep the shooter out because the door doesn't lock.
Yeah, that group had 30 days prior to that
an evacuation
upon themselves in that
department. A lockdown or whatever. Yeah,
they did the lockdown, and in the lockdown room, it just happened to have file cabinets along the outside wall.
Which so, I like. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, they thought about that. So I guess we'd probably have to go back to every department and say, okay, what do you have for a lockdown safe room, things of that nature. That would be good. Because we heard also, fire doors, during a fire here, when the alarm goes off, all these magnets release the doors and they go shut. Of course, you'd hate to lock somebody in as well as lock somebody out. So.
Well, they don't lock. Everything unlocks in the fire, right?
Well, in
the Center for Community Health, you have these rolling panels that come out of the ceiling, and they come down to the floor. And
for fire?
Yeah, and the purpose is to restrict airflow so that air from one part of the building isn't sucked in to feed a fire. In this building, at the end of the hallway here, by the on the east end of the hallway, and all the elevators and whatnot have magnets. In the event of a fire, the magnetic fields are interrupted, the doors all close, and that impedes the spread of the fire.
But you can still get out.
You can still get out.
Yeah.
In this case, people are thinking that, I need a duress button under my under my desk so that if I see something suspicious or if I think somebody's going to create an incident, I can push the duress button, and that will alert various, maybe campus security or what have you. So there are some fixes here that are relatively inexpensive, like adding door locks to doors that currently don't lock. But certainly we've got to study that. We've got to look at flow of people. We've got to coordinate with the fire marshal and all that. So,
So the bottom line on this is, looks like you've had some very rich kinds of discussions and a very specific list of improvements that can be made that you're going to be going through to determine whether or not you'll actually accomplish these. None of these are asking for any more in the way of weapons, so I would assume we wouldn't go there trying to solve a problem that nobody's trying to solve at this point when it comes to arming security guards, right?
Right.
So I would assume that we would just simply make sure that we're not reactionary, but you guys are proceeding in a very smart, level-headed way, and that's, I think you're on the right path. You can always come back in the future after you, I assume that you're going to go through this, Mark, and Mark.
Yeah, when it's fully cooked.
come back and maybe do Rev 2 or Rev 3 considerations.
Mm-hmm. And some of these are simply...
So you're on this for now. We're not doing anything with it.
No. Some of these are simply policy questions, like who's in charge of communications for the building and for DCS.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an information thing that, we need to answer those questions and ensure that everybody in the building understands the answer to the question. Rearrange chairs on the fourth floor lobby.
That was an interesting concept.
I mean, there's some very simple to-do things here that don't require a whole lot of deliberation.
So I would assume that you'll do the simplest, easiest ones first and then progressively tackle the harder ones as well.
Some of them require facilities work. We'll just get it in the work queue and get it done.
Great.
And that'd be like looking for a safe room, designing a safe room.
They did a pretty good job, everybody did, of actually finding one they could lock in.
You don't want to find it when you need it. You want to know where it is before you
need it. They did a good job.
It's a military guy talking there.
Training. All right.
Great. Very good. Good work. So you're on it.
Yes.
And you don't need anything from us.
Not at the moment. No. Okay. Here's a good one. Gun policy. The board asked staff to look into the existing workplace violence policy, specifically that portion that relates to employees and concealed carry. So Chris has been working the issue and is here to give us a couple of pointers and to share some info.
Certainly. Good afternoon, commissioners. The issue that you asked me to look into, I reviewed or researched from a couple of different perspectives. Number one, I looked at what other counties and states are taking similar actions. Number two, we tried to look from an OSHA WSHA standpoint to find out whether or not this practice, if the board adopted it, would be inconsistent with any kind of safety requirements under state or federal law. Actually, we did not find anything that would preclude that from that standpoint. There are, of course, restrictions. There are certain buildings that this isn't available for. So buildings like the courthouse.
Am I not trying to touch
court,
any of that?
Yeah, juvenile court, courthouse, family court.
CCH.
CCSO and the jail facility. And then finally, actually, there's a federal statute that would prohibit us from putting armed guards inside of CCH. Or allowing our employees to carry. So there's a federal restriction. So it would be predominantly PSC and some other buildings that are not included there. Excuse me. I've contacted in the interim also the elected officials to find out if they had any different policies. I know that Greg Kinsey said he would follow the board's policy. Peter Van Nortwick said likewise. Doug Lasher, I think, is concerned and is evaluating whether or not his employees would be subject to it or whether he would adopt his own policy. And then the judges I have not contacted them because largely they're already governed by the state law that regulates buildings or firearms in the courthouse. So I've done some work on that. Now, the area, there's some questions.
Before we go beyond that, is it true that the elected officials under current policy is exempt?
Yes.
So So our elected judges are exempt.
Yes. Well, they are exempt, but I'm not sure they can get through the metal detectors the courthouse. So I don't think they carry in the courthouse.
Yeah, I'm thinking they may or may not, or they would probably go through with the deputy, or they go through a separate door or something like that. I guess they handle it themselves.
I'm not going to go through the doors just like you.
Yeah, there's only two doors going into the courthouse that aren't alarmed.
Mm-hmm.
The old south and north exits are both alarm doors, and the east and west doors are all metal detector and security controlled. Mm-hmm. So absent somebody not letting or letting them bypass that metal detector, and those people are pretty good. I've never seen it. That's all I can say. I've been in the courthouse a bit, and everybody that I see, including employees and judicial staff, all go through the same door. So if they're carrying it, under a circumstance that I'm not aware of.
I'm thinking that they probably have their own policy when they go through, whether they're recognized or whatever.
I can't tell.
Of deputies that go in and out of there, they must turn off the detector when they walk through it or something.
Deputies go around.
Yeah, the sheriff's
judges
deputies.
Judges go right through the metal detector just like I used to do.
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff's deputies, there's lock boxes for them to store their weapons, and they have, they have different exemptions, even in the courthouse, because they're sworn officers.
Yeah. Okay.
The other question, there's an issue I would like some direction from the board on that I think really impacts the employees' perceptions, and that is, if we're going to change this policy, I think you need to specifically address the question of open carry. As you know, under existing state law, you can open carry without any kind of permit. So if you actively allow concealed weapons to be carried, the board should take a express policy on whether or not employees would be allowed to openly carry.
Mm-hmm.
I have an opinion on that, but right now I just need you to tell me whether or not that would be prohibited or allowed.
Well, you know, under that law it says unless you intimidate, and I think that we could possibly have some employees intimidated, so I just can't see that ever happening.
Well, I would agree. I think the potential for a hostile work environment with somebody having an open weapon somewhere would be just a nightmare for you, I think. I'm glad you said that.
Thank you.
But I will take that direction. Now, I will tell you that privately and publicly, I've gotten any number of employees' concerns about this. I'm not sure how the board wants to respond to that, but I will tell you that we have gotten some questions from some of the collective bargaining units that think that this relates to workplace safety and that they have a right to bargain over this. We haven't gotten any formal requests for bargaining, but that may be an issue as to whether or not we have a duty to bargain this question to impasse before we implement it. So that's an issue that's outstanding, and I'm working on that with Francine. Beyond that, I'm prepared to keep working, and I am going to keep working, but I need your direction and number one open carry, and number two, if you have a position on whether we should offer the opportunity to the bargaining units to bargain this question.
I suppose.
Well, it depends.
Well, Chris, I sent you two RCW codes, 9.41.299 and then 9.41.300.
That's our code.
299 talks about state preemption,
right,
where counties and cities may not enact ordinances or laws that are more restrictive than what the state has passed.
I understand.
Regarding guns, prohibiting weapons in certain areas. And 300 is pretty detailed.
What is it
saying? And where weapons are prohibited and what areas are restricted and that sort of thing. Does that influence our decision at all, those two?
Remember, there are two different... Your enactment of codes flows in two different directions. One, what can you make or what can you restrict the public from doing? That's one path, and that's the preemption path. You're preempted from regulating the public in that regard. There is an entirely different set of rights that you possess as an employee. And the courts have recognized that employers can have their own policies irrespective of cities or counties, and cities and counties as employers can have policies. So we're not regulating the public in this regard. We're regulating our own employees.
Okay.
And so that's different. It's much like the closest example I can give you is just because the county, and this was a case that came out of the Supreme Court, just because the county can't regulate firearms, if you lease out a building, if you lease out the Dolly building to somebody, and you want to prohibit your tenant from having firearms in that leased premises as a condition of the lease, you can do that, even though you own it and even though you're a public entity, because it's your action in the nature of a business owner and not in your governmental sense. And so an employer, acting as an employer, has the right to impose restrictions that you as a governmental regulator may not be able to impose on the public as a whole.
Okay.
Well, Chris, I think I understand that side of it. There's another side I'm concerned with. A lot of people were not even aware that we had the policy. And I suspect, for good reason, many employees have concealed carry. And unless somewhere down the road we find a solution for this, how do we deal with that if it becomes known? For example, one of the employees said, gee, I didn't know, but Charlie, I saw his jacket lift up and he's packing.
Yeah.
How do we address that? I mean,
well, the board has a number of choices. If somebody's inadvertent, like you say, they don't know. If the board continues the existing policy, you could inform it and just say, henceforth, you're not allowed to. And any violation of county policy that's ongoing and intentional once they've been warned now becomes either insubordination or an active violation for which they can be disciplined. If you choose to allow concealed weapons to be carried, then we would almost certainly request the board require them to receive some professional training. You don't want people who don't really know how to handle a gun getting a permit and just bringing it in because they don't have a prior record. So you'd want them to ensure that they know how to handle it and lock it and store it and do things, because one of the things nobody wants is workplace accidents where somebody accidentally does something and shoots through the wall and takes somebody's shoulder off. So that will be an issue. The other question, if we go forward, will be sort of what would the board's thoughts be with regard to when they're not concealing it on their person? I mean, are they going to be required to have it locked? Or
actually, here's what I would suggest.
Sure.
This is we can expand this to be a pretty big scale kind of research and discussion. But what I would suggest is we break this down into a step one.
Okay.
And step one is a simplified, more expedient correction to something that is already out of order. As I read the state law here, and as I understand the U.S. Constitution, we don't have the authority to restrict permitted gun owners from carrying concealed weapons into these areas that our policy restricts. And I'm not trying, what I'm looking for is not changing anything to do with the courthouse or any of that stuff, just simply removing some of this terminology in our policy as step one. We don't address the open carry because we're not doing it now. We just simply address the concealed permit as step one. And with that, you could couple that with Mark, you had an idea of offering training.
Chris and I talked about that, and maybe we might be better off suggesting outside entities that do the training for
okay.
us.
Okay, all right.
So that we don't have that
okay.
ownership of that.
So I assume if somebody's carrying a gun, a concealed weapon, that there's an assumption there that they're responsible enough to get a permit for it, that hopefully they'll have the presence of mind to know how to use it and how not to use it. So at step one, I wouldn't think we would get into the fine details or the bigger discussion of what other weapons. We would just simply say, remove the language that specifically prohibits using or carrying concealed weapons, permitted concealed weapons.
Okay. Now, does it matter, as I was trying to explain to Mark, I think that you actually do possess the authority. You may not be able to prevent the public from bringing in weapons into a public building. You do a concealed weapon, presuming providing the license. You are, however, I believe, authorized to regulate your own employees. That's different, and I think that is allowed. But I'm not trying to argue, and I certainly will follow the board's direction. I just want to make sure you know that you have separate powers based on the fact that you're an employer. We're not trying to regulate the public here.
Right. Okay. That's an interesting. Okay. So basically, this is our code.
This is our CW.
This is our CW.
Chris is saying there's a
completely different code section that deals with the rights of employers.
Right.
Well, their case.
Help me out here. I read the pertinent part here.
Well, this is RCW code that this bullet point is on, and it does talk about all the restricted areas that you discussed law enforcement and those kinds of things. And even in those cases, common areas of egress and ingress are excluded from those restricted areas. But the restricted areas do not include common areas of egress and ingress open to the general public. Then it goes on to cite cities, towns, and counties may enact laws and ordinances. It says, and this is what they say in the state law regarding our ordinances, restricting discharge of firearms.
Which we're not talking about.
Right, but it needs to be noted that that's what they... such laws and ordinances shall not abridge, it goes on to say in the second line of that, such laws and ordinances shall not abridge the right of the individual guaranteed by Article 1, Section 24 of the state constitution to bear arms in defense of self and others. The other is restricting possession of firearms to any stadium or convention center. The other is showing, demonstrating, or lecturing, as we know as brandishing. So, and also they have allow a restriction for the location of businesses selling firearms, except for, and the reason why I think it's important to point out what they do allow restriction as, because it's critical to show that they don't allow restriction for the right to the individual because of the state constitution to bear arms.
I understand, but you can't just read that statute without reading the cases that have interpreted.
Right.
There's a specific case from the Supreme Court that said, with regard to that convention center you described, that in fact you can ban the sale of firearms at a convention center if it's a leasehold premises, because you're acting as the proprietor, as the property owner, and our Supreme Court affirmed that authority. So you actually have to go on to read the cases and not just the statute.
But we're not talking about convention centers.
I understand, but I'm just saying, with regard to this, there's also a case that talks about your right as employers. And I'm saying that we're not talking about an ordinance that prohibits the public from bringing firearms in, which may be counterintuitive.
Right, we're not talking about that either.
I am talking about your ability to regulate employees, and that statute doesn't say an employer can't prohibit his employees from bringing firearms into the place of employment. None of those statutes say that.
What they just said.
If I understand where you want to go with this,
common area.
If I understand this, the step one would be, by the power of the pen, and I think that's what Chris was getting to, you can remove that section of the HR policy. Says no.
Yeah.
Have the right to do that. No question.
Step one.
But you're not required to.
Right.
That's my.
Fine point, and I accept that.
Okay. And then part two, in my mind, would be the rest of it. Understanding the rest of it.
Yep. So the simple incremental step would be just to remove that prohibition
from the HR policy.
From the HR policy.
So that those that do have it are not running afoul of.
I have a question of concern. Sure. Workplace safety. Would we be liable if someone was to come in here and harm one of our employees because we have failed to provide them a safe workplace?
Well, I guess it depends on the nature of the complaint. If It's very difficult to answer that question because workplace safety can be or is an obligation of an employer. For example, if you know an employee is being threatened by a customer and you don't take some steps to protect that employee and the customer comes back and injures your employee, yeah, you can be liable because you didn't take steps to protect or to maintain some workplace safety. But most of those cases are very fact specific, and you need to know what the challenge, what the hazard was to the workplace. If we had unsafe stairwells where we had paper and people slipped on those, clearly we would be liable for that. So there are all kinds of examples where, yeah, we would be liable. If the mere fact that some person could come in and we know that there's disgruntled, we'll say, collective bargaining units, or because there are disgruntled voters because of a particular thing, the mere fact that we know there are disgruntled people who exist in the county does not create a duty upon you or a liability, the fact that one of those people came in and did something illegal. I mean, protect, yes, so I'll leave it with
okay.
there.
I think I understand that. It's a fine line.
It can be. It's
because
a balancing.
We recognize the possibility.
I would tell you, you will have L&I liability in the event that somebody accidentally shoots somebody in the workplace with a gun that they bring here.
Yeah.
We will pay that L&I claim.
Someone from the public come and shot somebody here, that'd be an L&I claim.
It would certainly.
So that does show a show liability.
Both sides, whether it's employee or a third member of the public.
In Olympia, I don't know what the policy was, but it was like a don't ask, don't tell thing. And there we had 500 people up there.
Well, the Capitol building, there you walk right in. No metal detectors or anything.
Yeah, I think they have a couple metal detectors in some of the areas, but for the most part, the general public area and all the House chambers and the Senate chambers, they're wide open.
Yeah, the legislators tell me that they are allowed to carry.
But yet, every fourth person is a state patrolman. You know. But, I mean, it was a don't ask, don't tell.
You need to be out patrolling the roads.
Thing. And I remember there was an incident up there, and the speaker, along with the detective from the Washington State Patrol, pretty much said the same thing. I don't know how that would go along with his other. I think I'd like to look at it a little closer for consideration. I'm very concerned with now that it's a cat's out of the bag. We have a tendency to make our employees a possible target, and I relate to the gentleman that went into the movie theater. Intentionally into that specific movie theater. He was the one that admitted to that because it was a gun-free zone. All the gun-free zones that are going on is where the shootings take place. That's very, very troubling. And so, I would never want to put a sign out front to encourage that by saying, this is a gun-free zone. So, I personally like to ponder on this. Continue to weigh the feelings of our employees. I don't want to make them a target. I don't want them uncomfortable. I want them to feel secure. Gosh, even if it takes a deal, like you mentioned, Mark, that we offer up a training thing. I mean, if that would help. I just sent the emails to everybody to share that. The legislative house up there in Olympia had a shootout yesterday, and all the staff members and legislators went down to the shootout and demonstrated and had the opportunity to shoot different weapons and hunting rifles and bird guns and things of that nature. I can remember doing that myself. In fact, we were down in the Grand Ole Opry, and we had the same opportunity down there, but it's So that's kind of where I'm more comfortable with today.
Well, right now we have a situation where we have a policy that says, even though before we didn't, a lot of our, probably many, some of our staff didn't know that policy existed, And now we're saying, hey, the policy exists. So the common or the more typical situation that we've seen out there is where a shooter comes in and they progressively shoot this person, move over there and find some more, shoot that person, find some more, shoot that person. If our policy ends up having somebody get shot by that person who had to keep their weapon in the car because of our policy, or basically were disarmed because of that policy, and you can see that sequence, and they get shot, we've disarmed them from their ability to defend themselves or defend their coworkers. That's a situation that exists today if we say that policy is in effect. I think that's we can't subscribe to wishful thinking. There are people that do that in our culture.
You know, you mentioned that there was a Chris. Do you remember? I think it was Southern Oregon that they reprimanded or disarmed a lady teacher who had a concealed permit, and she had an ex-husband beat her. Remember that?
I remember that.
She took that to court, and I don't recall.
She lost.
She lost in that case. But there's a case. I mean, you know, there's no winner in a thing like that, and she was the big loser. Not only was she unable, so they disarmed her, and then she eventually got beat up by her husband.
Commissioners, I want to make clear, my role is not today to be an advocate for or against any policy. My role is simply to provide you with legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that the sheriff has done some research, so if you want to look at it, there's I will tell you at least that there are risks both ways. Certainly, if you bring in weapons, there are risks that go with it. If you don't allow the people to bring in weapons, there are risks that go along with it. It's not an area that is that I'm particularly familiar with, other than I know the basics to the 941 pretty well. But in terms of gun safety, I don't know. And so if it's something that's important, you might ask the sheriff, who has done some study on that, because I know... think of her name, but in any event, so one of the sheriff's deputies has actually done some work on both sides of this issue, and it's something you may want to hear about. But
yeah.
I don't want to be in the position of sounding like I'm disagreeing with either you, Commissioner, mm-hmm. or you, Anna. I'm only trying to say that there are considerations out there, and that you need to at least know about them.
Well, and just let me set the record straight here. I'm providing information.
Okay.
I'm not a policymaker. I'm reading what I wrote.
And I didn't even say that.
No, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
About 4 years ago, I had a discussion with Tony Gollard and some other folks and Bill Barron about this very situation. And one of the things we had discussed at the time was removing the prohibition from the HR policy, but instead of saying carte blanche, you know, hey, everybody go bring your weapon, there was more of a discussion that it would be sort of a sanctioned thing where you'd have to actually get, it's like we clear you to drive a vehicle. Well, you would be cleared to have the opportunity to have concealed weapon at work. And that was the case where you might get a sign-off from other folks. You might get a sign-off from the county administrator. You might get a sign-off, in other words, that you do have a background check, and that's cleared. And there's other things you can do. That was the only other prior discussion we've had about this. And it doesn't answer the question about whether somebody has the right thing or not. It's just we had talked about.
And it sounds like we ought to be able to make sure we listen to our sheriff, listen to get the input on that. We have really, I know I spoke of an abridged, simple, incremental step that we can take to simply remove the prohibition from carrying weapons that are permitted. But there's even a pre-step in front of that, and that is we currently have a policy that says you cannot carry a permitted weapon. Certainly, I would think that if we're going to take several steps in this, the first step would be to say we will not enforce that policy during this transition time that we are considering this change. Is that okay?
I was thinking about how to do that, because my concern is that all of a sudden we're aware of this policy, and like I said before, I'm aware of a few, and I think it's very easy that we have lots of concealed carries here. We just didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm concerned about those being disarmed, you might say, with lack of a better term. Mm-hmm.
Because of our newsflash.
Yeah. So what's our legal? If we were to say, while we're in transition and review, can we not, we're not enforcing this at this time? Is that possible?
Yeah, I think
we're not telling everybody, go bring your guns. We're just saying those of you who do, we're, you know.
The board could take action.
I wouldn't encourage anybody to go home and bring your gun. Those comfortable with their concealed permit or do so on a daily basis already.
The board could pass as a amendment to this policy that during the review period that you're not going to, that no disciplinary action would be taken against anyone who
has a legal
had a concealed weapon that was permitted.
Yeah.
A permitted mm-hmm. concealed weapon on the county campus.
Mm-hmm.
I would be comfortable with that
yeah.
for now.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
So that's step one. So just like you gave a disclaimer, Anna gave a disclaimer, I have a disclaimer too, and I think it goes for all of us. We are not encouraging anyone to bring weapons. It's not a positive message to go out there and please bring, or we encourage you to bring weapons. All it is the process that we're considering is removing or backing off on a restriction from their permitted weapons, concealed weapons already. So it's a less of a negative, not a positive.
It's a subtler touch. You
know? Mm-hmm.
No, you're going to come and hurt us, think twice.
So, if we're entering into a transition time right now, we just mark the beginning of it. It says we're not going to enforce. The second part of that says that transition, in order for us to be able to get out of this transition, we've got to do some homework. We've got to get input, do some listen to relevant input from our sheriff's office and others. So, Chris and Mark, whatever you can suggest to us to help fill those gaps in, turn on the lights, give us insight so we can consider those. This is the time for us to be able to invite that.
We appreciate it.
Help us to make an informed decision. Maybe it'll end up being a decision to say, we're not going to restrict your right to carry, whether it be concealed or open carry, but it may end up being that you need to show that you're responsible and that you have something that says, I've been trained. I'm not just playing Mr. Vigilante. Maybe it'll end up being something like that.
Okay.
So we want to include what are the proactive steps to make sure that we don't err on the other side. We got carelessness going on here and we're party to it.
Can I add one thing?
Mm-hmm.
I won't say who this elected official is, but I had a conversation with another elected official the other day, and his policy has been that he allows with written permission certain employees in his department to carry concealed weapon with written permission, and he requires that they show him that they've gone through some kind of gun safety training, and he does not reveal the names of those people to protect their privacy. So there's all kinds of, mm-hmm. seems like all kinds of things going on out there.
Yeah.
The one thing I'd like to interject, if I may, is I do think it's a very bad idea to have open carry. The only reason I say to have an employee have open carry
yeah.
is
yeah.
it intimidates the public.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. That's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mr. Risk Manager,
yeah.
we want your input on this yeah. Because this is your baby. we want to make sure we don't end up going over here. Over here, we find the right appropriate policy here that protects people's right to defend themselves, but doesn't put people in danger because we've sanctioned irresponsible, untrained weapons in the hands of people that could be more harm than do more harm than good.
Right. And to me, the harm came when it was made public. That's the harm.
Actually, the discussion that I had it was about 4 years ago with the prosecutor, and the sheriff was over there. It was if you have to do it, it was more along the lines of your whatever elected official you're under does that. Basically a sort of an approval on the screen. You still have the right to go to your boss and say, hey, I would feel more comfortable if I could do that. Mm-hmm. But what it does also is it sort of keeps it a little more subtle and a little more subdued, and it doesn't give a different air.
So what we're doing today, we're only talking about permitted concealed carry. We're not talking about open carry. The policy as it is, this is the only part that we're changing until we get through this process to determine, to address what do you do about permitted concealed carry.
Well, not only that, be specifically a line item thing for open carry.
Yeah. But,
it's good. Okay. We'll come back with more education, more. You know, I have, anytime someone has concealed carry, there's a lot of responsibility that goes along with that. And any time that your concealed carry is not on your body, you risk. You know, you leave it in your car, it has a higher risk than if it's on your body. If you leave it in a drawer, it's a higher risk in the drawer. So if we ever go there.
I may expect that, of course, on any of these things. So it's pretty obvious that we were not the first ones to ask these questions. Mm-hmm. We've got 39 counties in Washington State, and WASAC being a great resource, we have been able to ask them, what do other counties do in order to address this, and we can steal their best ideas.
Okay. All right. Anything else? And then we'll move on.
Got what you need, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chris, for helping us.
Why don't you and I work with WASAC?
Sure.
To ask them.
Economic development, I haven't done anything on it. I'm not prepared.
He's not alone. I'm just as
I know you're not happy.
Yeah, that's right.
I did circulate the railroad coordinator, employment coordinator manager program.
Did I get that?
Position.
You haven't looked at it either.
I emailed you guys.
Guilty.
Oh,
you guys
emailed.
You wrote this, so I thought this is where we'd start.
Oh, yeah.
And we build.
You know, I want to take that piece of paper and turn it over. And economic development is on top, and railroad coordinator second.
Exactly.
Some work has been done by a third party on this.
Okay.
And we can share that work with you.
All right.
And instead of you trying to write out new language, you can evaluate the language that's been written.
Took a shot at rewriting this to do exactly what you said.
And I'm really looking along the lines of more analyst. Research, project.
This is actually a program.
Sure.
Economic development, in our view.
Well, yeah. Okay, that's a different position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is
economic development program.
We have
and it's a complex, multi-department effort.
Yeah.
You know, because whoever we hire for the economic development position, when we combine the railroad, then we can eliminate that railroad position and we can get something more policy.
I don't want to eliminate that because it's part of economic development.
Right. But
if we can build it in,
we're going to combine economic development and railroad.
Yes.
And then the position that is now only railroad with economic development along the rail corridor, we can change that and get another policy person in here to help
us
and save $100,000.
Same note.
I'm gonna circulate the rewrite of this.
Okay.
And you guys are promising that next Wednesday.
Monday morning during our one-on-ones, we will ask you if you've had a chance to look at it as a reminder to have looked at it by
Very
next Wednesday.
Good.
Mark it up. Change it.
Okay, so put that in the Marshall Colley file.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you,
moving along.
Okay, so that's old business out of the way.
Did you have another
commissioner
position?
Report? Huh?
Did you have another position?
Oh, but that, yeah, that comes after the commission. We can do it now. Pete Capel.
You mean Heath Henderson?
Oh, I'm having lunch with Pete Friday. Sorry.
Is he back?
Nobody's coming to our...
I know. Yeah. I'm excited about it.
Yes, Heath needs these folks because we're entering the intense road maintenance season.
Yes.
And so it's
green light for me.
Up to four.
This is that 9 month
position. Yeah, it's seasonal work. Bring them on, let them go, bring them on, let them go.
Mm-hmm. So you got a green light? I got a green light.
We've done it for quite a while.
Yeah,
I've looked at that.
That's why we have the world's best roads here.
It's an economy measure.
Because, you know, like this last year, we could have used it for snow removal.
Hey, you know, I mentioned to Heath Henderson, I don't know if you've been on Highway 99, but there's a great deal of potholing on Highway 99.
Really?
Oh.
The weather lately.
Oh, goodness. And so I said, Heath, get in your car and drive up Highway 99. There are some really nasty pothole strips. And he went out and looked at it. And here's what he explained to me this week what had happened. Apparently, they put an overlay on Highway 99, and they kind of shifted the center line. And they didn't pull up the old stripes. And those were thermoplastic stripes. So the asphalt didn't adhere to the stripes as well as it did the surrounding road
nice
surface.
Straight. Line potholes.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. And they're like a foot and a half from the center line in a straight line. And so haste makes waste, I guess.
They forgot to sandblast that out.
If they would have removed those stripes, then we wouldn't have the potholing problem that we got. And so I asked him, are you going to cut and then remove the stripes and then repave? And he said they're looking at doing that.
What part of 99 was that on?
Where?
What part? Yeah.
Towards the south end. Minnehaha, 68th, if you turn right. Just north of there, there's some pretty serious potholing.
We were talking at one time about doing more with that, whether or not we can consider some parking along 99.
Oh, street parking?
Yeah.
It's pretty wide.
Besides some concern, we recognize the concern of the multitude of driveways. There would still be places along there. We have like 15-foot lanes. And it's
wide, you mean?
Yeah, they're 15-foot wide. And it's just a wasted space where it could be better utilized. We want to promote businesses along Highway 99, whether you like them or not. You have those car lots there. And if you're going to help the car lots, I mean, you would allow a parking out in front because others, they have to drive onto the lot.
Or they could put some of their inventory out there.
I wouldn't want that. But it's something that
Austin's
I don't want them
water,
to go out there and just go willy-nilly until we've had a chance to talk about that, because we were talking about changing beautification, making some improvements. I would like to have some input in that policy.
Well, as they redevelop, they're putting in frontage improvements, sidewalks, and that sort of thing, and making it a rather than just one big paved area with no curbs.
Right.
Well, in this case, we're talking about fixing the potholes, strips that are out there, and they're not restriping. They're just simply, they're not having to. So.
The new stripes are already there. They're a foot and a half to the left.
Good. So they don't impact that. I just don't want this to escalate, because if there are potholes now, they're already going to have to back off and saying, "We have the world's best roads here." And it's like, no,
except for how
we fix that. So there's always room for improvement to escalate things, but fixing potholes takes priority.
I just want some hot black stuff put down, and I want a roller to go over the top.
Yeah,
fix
it.
That's all.
They're going to have to follow that, scrape off the line, and then put down.
Right. But and hopefully they won't be these irregular shaped, ugly things. They'll be nice and linear.
Yeah. If they get on it right away, they'll be linear.
So anyway, he's on that. So, okay, good to go on this. Thank you. Uh-huh. Okay, then, commissioners, do you have anything?
You?
I'm good.
Axel?
I'm pretty good. It's working.
Holly?
We're making progress on all fronts at for the state and county.
I sent him my revised with revised with revised.
Is that the integrity resolution?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry. I need more time for that.
Okay, it passed.
Jeff and I will get together on that revision of the revision.
Okay.
Just all a little stuff falling in place.
I've been kind of staying in touch with
Jeff. Yeah, that's good.
And so, that's okay.
I have a bit of a redo. And this is just an informational thing, but last year I set something up with some other staff, and we did like a big visitation with the school for the blind. And I wanted to do that this year, but I didn't have enough time between when they called for career day and now to do it. They only gave me a few weeks. And so I worked with them over there, and I think we're going to set something up, maybe not as big as we did last year with them this spring. But I am having a young woman come over next Thursday morning, same day as the State of the County. So I just want to give you a heads up. You might see her. She's going to kind of shadow me. And I had a long conversation with her today about what her interests are so that I could take her kind of to the right departments and stuff. So we're going to visit juvenile. She's interested in maybe doing probation, officer counseling, or maybe something legal. So I'll take her downstairs with Chris and his department, and then, you know, maybe something HR related. But she wants to work with people. She knows that. And anyhow, so just FYI, that's she'll awesome. Be here next Thursday morning, and we'll kind of be walking around talking to folks. And then later, though, this spring, I do want to bring, I think last year we had like 12 or 15 of the kids from mm-hmm. the School for Blind over. And it was really cool. We went to 911 and did some stuff with Pete, but it's just, it's a larger turnaround time to get a group that big, something that's of value set up with the different departments, so it'll just take a little bit, but she will be here next week.
I've been involved with the blind athletes for some time, and it's just amazing what they can do.
Yeah, it is.
It takes courage.
So, yeah, it does. I mean, you just have to be so impressed with what they accomplish. Mark, do you have anything?
No, actually, I do. I was thinking about it. One of the things, I just want to run the idea by you, but assuming it all works out in the budget cycle, but one of the things we've run into is budgets are so tight that if it's not programmed in, it's very difficult to get money in a timely fashion. Sometimes you run into things that may only be a few $1,000, but it might be handy, and I'm just throwing this out there, that the county administrator have some amount that during the year for contingencies, like Don Benton's security system he'd like to get put in right now. I don't have the budget for you because we didn't project for it, but it's something that should be done quickly but may not be able to.
He's kind of in a vulnerable position down there.
Right. In the back hallway. And so, like if the county administrator had some dollar amount, I don't know, $50,000 or $75,000 for a biennium, may not use it, but if there's something that we need contingent and quickly, it sure would help, because if we program out all of our major funds and we don't have room for that, then something really important may not get done quickly. And leave it to the county administrator level to say, yeah, that's a good thing. And then, you know, inform you guys. But just an idea.
I could think of two resources off the top of my head. Risk management.
Right.
And Mark McCauley's checkbook.
Yeah. Actually, I like the idea.
You ever met my wife?
The one in charge of the checkbook.
Yeah. I have to check it out.
At least one resource.
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea, because we can turn on a dime, be responsive to get things done. We're looking at a get-it-done guy here.
Right.
And the system works for us. We don't work for the system. And I trust his judgment. So, yeah, what do we need to do it?
Well, we'll just
Bob's going to kill you, you know.
I know. I know. I'm already on his
one path. Disclaimer. Yeah. It must pass the Bob test.
Yeah. Budget Bob must pass.
Bob Stevens, Bob.
And my
budget
caveat,
Bob's got to
right.
give it his good housekeeping seal of approval.
And my caveat is, if the money is available, we can do it. If not, it's still a good concept. If we like the concept, we can figure out some other way. But if the concept works, then...
And if he's listening to this...
I'm in trouble.
You need to go out the back.
Well, does it take $50,000 for risk management and stick it near, you know? I mean, but anyway, okay. All right.
Okay. Well, that's a good thought, Mark. I appreciate you bringing that up.
Sure. What do they have in mind? I'm trying to...
Well, if I have a limited amount of...
I mean, what do you have in mind for a security feature?
Oh, proximity card... And then an intercom box with a camera.
And a buzz-in.
Just like they have on the fifth floor with IT.
Just that camera and your card.
Yeah,
a card to open the door if you're an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And then that same switch.
I mean the whole corridor.
Oh, I don't want to close off the whole thing.
We took a look at that, and actually it there's other issues with that. It constrains, I hate to say this, but it constrains the workout room, it constrains the west access, both in and out, which is more for fire. And it constrains the public's access to go through. And if when I kind of really pushed on right to the, mm-hmm. to the wall, and I finally said, "What do you really have to have?" And he'd like that front door locked, his front door locked, so that somebody can call and say, "I need to make an appointment with you," or if I don't have an appointment, it's me, Buzz, and they can see through the glass and they can see on the, and then they just let him in. That's really the nuts of it. That's really what they need right now.
Yeah, the IT department has a little box with a camera. And you push a button, and you can talk into the box, and they hear you on the other side, mm-hmm. and there's a little screen, and they can see who they're talking to.
That's good.
You hit a button, and the door opens.
Yeah.
And
so
you don't
have enough to do that now?
It's not programmed. And so
it's like 5 or 6,000 facilities is under financial stress at the moment.
Yeah.
And so, at those quarterly briefings where Mark Gassaway says his fund's in trouble, that fund's in trouble, he doesn't want facilities to be in trouble.
No, because Bob was already going to beat me up over it, so let's make it a hostile workplace.
So, but he's using Don Benton's security request as an example. Mm-hmm. There are other things that come up throughout the year where you need to have a little budget and you don't have it.
One of the smartest things we can do is to empower get it done guys and get it done gals. So.
Yeah.
So it's like changing oil in the car. If you change your oil in the car quickly, you never have big problems later.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll follow up on that. I do have an alibi, Commissioner Mielke, if I could.
Alibi? You mean a do-over?
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah.
May I have some
more alibi for the do-over?
Okay. Yeah. Regarding the Washington Association of County Officials invoice, I sent an email out to our elected officials, Scott Weber, our clerk, Doug Lasher, our treasurer, Tony Golick, our prosecuting attorney, Gary Lucas, our sheriff, Greg Kimsey, our auditor, asking them whether they supported continued membership in the association and whether they believe they get value out of it. And the sentiment is strong and unanimous that we get value out of our $54,000 dues payment and that they all strongly recommend continued membership. So...
That's the Association of Counties?
No, this is County Officials.
Well, County Officials.
Yeah, so we have WASAC, Washington State Association of Counties. That's for the commissioners. And they have WACO, Washington County Officials Association.
So
Officials.
Could that be a department thing?
Well, they're all general fund. So whether you authorize payment of the
part
invoice...
Of the budget.
It's in the budget, but they're all general fund.
Part of their budget. Be part of the department's budget.
So then I have to have...
It hadn't been.
Maybe same difference. We either
six pieces of 50,000 or 150,000.
Yeah, I mean, I could put different coding in there. But
actually,
it all comes out of the general fund.
Yeah, it does.
All the way you ask the question.
Yeah.
And say, is this important enough to you? Do you get enough from this that your department is one-fifth of this, so it'd be $10,000 out of your budget?
Mm-hmm. I like that idea, because if it's coming out of a general pool, sure, I'll take what I get.
Yeah.
If it comes out of your budget, now you're taking ownership. And so, yeah, I like that approach.
Okay. And one thing that we didn't do when we looked at previous payments is I did not look at the account that paid the bill. So I'll go in and see if...
Yeah, I think right now we just paid it.
Yeah, but we may have split it previously. I don't know whether we did or not. I'll take a look at that. But all right, I'll...
Okay.
I'll go back to them and ask.
Food for thought.
Yes.
Dealer out there.
Okay.
Okay. And that's step one. Did they all know that this is the 50-some thousand dollars a year is what this is costing? When you
asked
question?
Yes, I told them in my email.
Came back with that.
Okay.
Now.
All right. You might want to ask them. Now we're going to divvy. If we divvy that up, it's going to cost your department X number of thousand. Do you want that out of your budget or no? Let them choose that way. Answer the question.
All the way you asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
You guys play hardball, I swear.
Take ownership.
Hey, I'm looking at 15
A lot of them are heavily involved in the organization.
Yeah. The other part of it is, did we find out what kind of legislation they're lobbying for?
Yeah, there were some specific examples.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I'll launch their the responses I got from the electeds. Yeah. I'll share with you.
You guys should see those.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's it?
That's all. Yes,
for sure. Just asking to give you another do-over.
Okay.
So you pulled my name out of the bucket today to abuse, right?
Mark, for my notes, just to clarify, do you gentlemen want to see those responses before he goes back and asks that question?
Which
the question you asked him to go with, about the cost sharing? Do you want to see their responses before he asks that question?
You mean what lobby?
No, they're not
what they're lobbying for?
No.
It's not
no.
going to change their mind.
They want me to answer that. Ask that question regardless.
They're okay. They're independent questions. Okay. They can run in parallel.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Carol Levin, the other day, was really concerned with Webolt, is who it is. She sent an email about it. I think that she's slow, but I think also with reading another email today from the other day, I think I understood, and I sent her back for a point of clarification. They're under current use as ag, but they're zoned commercial. I think that's what it was. And then they wanted to harvest the trees to pay for the care of their mother. And I think she was saying because they wanted to harvest the trees, they had to pay the 7 years back taxes as commercial.
Because they took it out of
that
farm.
Doesn't
they took it out of they took it out of one use and put it in the other.
Right, but
yeah.
But if the zoning changed in 1 year and all previous years it was
zoned. No, I think we changed it. I think we changed it to the last comprehensive plan. Much like we did.
So in 2007, that's when the zoning changed?
I think so.
Okay, well, that's six
so
years
I'm
ago.
I'm thinking so. They're still in ag or forestry. And so I'm not sure. I'm going to their banquet Friday night.
You are?
And I'd like to have some I'd like to have a vest.
Well, I don't Peter
and that vest and that vest of his knowledge. Oh, so yeah. I need to understand exactly.
And Van Nordwijk talked to her for quite a while.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I saw that.
Yeah, I don't know how that turned
and
out.
And also, Don Benton had talked to Ron Wieringa about this. So somebody knows what's going on more than what we do up here. And I have to go. I'm sure I'm going to have to answer some questions. So I'd like to have the full story and not just third party.
Sure.
And I think that's part of what Carol's getting, because I thought it was actually taken care of. Mm-hmm. I thought I understood that Don had gone to his staff and said, hey, it says here in the law that they may preserve the tree, not that they shall. One of my programs was given to Paul Scarpelli, and the project that was passed down to him was what I gave
Kelly,
him to do to see if they could do tablets.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to kind of get an idea of what he's done on that so far.
Okay.
We'll get caught up on this other stuff later. Remember the list?
Okay.
Axel smile. You're welcome, Axel.
Yeah,
you're
welcome. I remember the list.
And that's all I have. Is anything else good for the order? The good of the order?
Nope. I think we're in good shape.
All right. Thank you, everybody. I guess we're done.
Yeah.